Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Pharma Marketing 411 podcast. We talk with the life science industry's most successful marketing professionals and gain insight on strategy and implementation from those who have made it happen. We'll have conversations that educate, inspire, and provide you with the tools you and your team can use to be successful. Our goal is to share valuable information that you can apply immediately to help your brands grow. PM 411 is brought to you by the Marketing Excellence Team at the Brooks Group. We are a learning and development firm that specializes in helping life science companies maximize marketing acumen, performance, and results. You can find the Brooks Group at thebrooksgrouponline.com. And now, get ready for the 411.
Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, John Hinkle, and I am joined today by my co-host, Will Brown, on this special two-part podcast. Hey, Will.
Great to see you, John.
Yeah, great to see you too. Over the course of the next two episodes, we are going to be taking an in-depth look at pharmaceutical branding and trademark development from two industry insiders, Jennifer Syrup and Nancy Globus. Now, in this episode, we are talking with Jennifer Syrup, VP of Trademark at Addison Whitney, one of the leading global branding agencies in the life science space. Many of the most recognized brand names you see today were created under the guidance of Jennifer. So, hey, Jennifer, it's my pleasure to welcome you to the podcast.
Hi there, John. I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you.
And Jennifer, I'm excited to have you join us as well. And I'd really like to just start out by asking you, are there any surprising or interesting things about trademarks or proprietary names that many of our listeners may not be aware of that you might be able to share?
You know what? Here's a fun fact. Did you know that elevator was originally a trademark? It has been so overused that it's actually become a generic term. And a lot of products and brands that are on the market now have undergone that same, you know, evolution in the sense of, for example, you look at things like Pampers or Q-tips or Band-Aid is overused a lot. They're still trademarks, but they're in danger of potentially losing their, you know, status because we so over-genericize it. And then, you know, there are brands that are still protected but frequently used as generic terms, such as adrenaline, which is epinephrine. And similarly, EpiPen is used in the same way when you talk about an epinephrine injector.
And I understand that there's like, I don't even know the number, but I know it's a big number of trademarks that are filed every day. It seems like it's kind of an amazing number. Do you have a sense of that?
From what I understand, there is a trademark filed once every 53 seconds globally in international class five, which is where pharmaceuticals sit. And that's how many pharmaceutical brand names are being filed globally. It's a very astounding number.
It is an astounding number. And, you know, it makes me think that it seems like every day would be harder and harder to try to come up with a name that is, you know, that works in the market just because there's, you know, so many names out there and it seems like it'd be harder and harder every day. But as you're working with clients, which are, you know, pharmaceutical companies or life science companies, what is the ultimate deliverable? What are you wanting to, what is the ultimate goal of what you're doing when you're engaging in this trademark process with them?
Well, I laugh because, you know, there's only 26 letters in the alphabet. And, you know, I always joke with clients, you know, perhaps you'd like a name that doesn't have any vowels. But kidding aside, ideally, it's a free and clear trademark, meaning that there's little to no potential conflicts. But, you know, that's, you know, every name has some level of risk, whether it be high or low. But it really is, I think, in the pharmaceutical naming process, it's truly the alignment of the marketing team and the legal team, setting those expectations. You know, the marketing team, they're all about having a great name and how this is going to resonate with their audience. But if they can't own it, it's just going to be very frustrating. So it's important to set those correct expectations and, you know, make go all the way through the process.
Yeah. So you mentioned a couple of hurdles. One, you want it to be like a great name. Also, it needs to be a name that can be owned. And then I guess owned meaning that it's unique, or does owning mean that it can be approved?
Owned means that it's, you know, you've gone through the process of clearing the name and that, you know, there are not any potential conflicts and you are, able to register your name within the patent and trademark offices, you know, in whichever, you know, you know, national office, whether it be the U.S. or elsewhere.
And those two things, I assume, have to overlap. It's got to be a great name, and it has to be registered. And I'm sure that's the sort of the struggle that you have to go through, the challenge you have to go through in every process.
There are a lot of names that are registered that aren't great names. And then there are a lot of great names that sometimes never make it because, you know, they look or sound similar to something else. And it's finding that balance of really finding having a great name that you can, you know, have legally and, you know, throughout that process.
You know, one thing I've noticed, Jennifer, is that through the years, the naming process has probably stayed largely the same, but the trends in names have evolved. Like years ago, you may have been able to successfully get a name cleared that had almost a nod towards the indication of the product or something about the disease state, but those rules have somewhat evolved. Could you walk us through a little bit of the process that most companies or clients of yours will go through to start from scratch to, you know, having that name be approved through the FDA and also the patent office?
Well, what's interesting about pharmaceutical trademarks is that not only do you need to, you know, clear them from a legal perspective, but they do undergo a review through the regulatory bodies, whether it be the FDA or the EMA or Health Canada, for example. They will look at names to determine, you know, in the efforts to avoid, you know, for medication errors and for patient safety. So, you know, from a trademark perspective, we're looking and does it look like something? Does it sound like something? And, you know, is anyone else using it? From a regulatory perspective, they don't just look at look-alike and sound-alike. They look at other things like, you know, when you write the name, when you write it, you know, is, you know, in a handwriting sample, for example, does it look like something else? They'll look at dosing and routes of administration, and, you know, anywhere there may be potential confusion or where a pharmacist or, you know, a doctor can make that mistake. They look, and they also look at things that may be over promotional. So you could never name a drug cancer cure or something, you know, something to that effect.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And when do not only maybe your own internal regulatory consultants get involved, but at what point do you start to engage regulatory authorities to start that process of getting a name cleared? How early can you get their input so that you don't end up in a situation where you're having to go back and redo work later?
Many agencies, we really talk about, or we look at that from the beginning. You know, when we create the names, there's certain checks and balances that are involved from, you know, whether it be medical resources or phonographic and orthographic patterns, also trademarks. So that's one piece of it. And then, you know, engaging the regulatory experts within our agency, for example, they're involved in that whole process. And we work very closely in a very consultative way in order to make sure that, you know, we create a great name that is potentially viable from a legal perspective and, of course, you know, regulatory as well. And those two pieces are the most important aspect of pharmaceutical brand development.
That's great. Thank you.
And I know that I've been in this process with an agency before in a previous life when I was a brand manager and we were naming products. And I just remember it being a very fascinating process and really creative. But I also remember that, you know, there are several aspects that we had to look at and we had to consider in the process. And I know Will's going to ask you this question maybe in a second about, you know, sort of walk through a process with us. But I just remember that the mark had to be distinctive from a verbal point of view and had to be distinctive and not confusing from a script point of view. Are there other sort of hurdles like that or things that you have to make sure as you're starting even at the beginning at maybe the brainstorming process?
Yeah, does it look like or sound like something else? Is it distinctive? But also you have to think about the linguistics as well. You know, if the name could mean something offensive or vulgar in another language or even parts of the name, you know, there may be something in there that, you know, in another language could be really offensive. And, you know, you have to take that into consideration as well.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing reading about some of those names that sounded great in the U.S., but for a global brand just was not going to be acceptable. And I know that's the challenge. And maybe that's something we'll talk with Nancy more about how to kind of consider the global regulatory bodies along with the U.S. But I think, Will, you wanted to ask a question about sort of the process very specifically, sort of like, you know, starting from the first sort of engagement and how you walk through.
Yeah, I'm very interested in terms of, you know, when you first start the creative process and the brainstorming, you know, how does that go? Like who all gets involved? You know, how involved is the client at that point? And then where do you go from there? How do you narrow the list down to a group of names that are really, you know, interesting, not only from a creative perspective, but that you think may get through the legal and regulatory hurdles?
Well, it all starts with an idea. And what's really important is listening to your client, understanding what they're trying to convey, what their vision is, concepts, and, you know, how they want their drug to look or sound, understanding where their product or service is going to be marketed. What are their key markets? You know, will it be a global brand? Is it going to only be a domestic brand? And that, you know, those are factors to consider. Once that's established, determining, you know, from a trademark perspective, you know, which trademark class registries to search. Obviously, you hear about class five, you know, pharmaceutical class five, class five, class five, and defining what the goods and services are, or defining what, you know, what this drug or product is going to do, whether it be a device or a pharmaceutical. Determining how what they want to see. So we'll take certain things into consideration, such as maybe it's a completely blank canvas name, something that doesn't mean anything, just, you know, sounds really cool. Maybe they want to convey an image of, you know, the sun or the color green or whatever it may be. Other areas may be they want to convey the mechanisms of action or some aspects of what the drug does. It could be a combination, or maybe it's, you know, they need to see all of that and determine what really is going to just feel right. I guess it's like when you know it when you see it type of thing.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's a challenge in many ways, I would think, because, you know, as more and more marks get used up, or have, you know, gone through clearance, it's harder to get something approved. So I've seen, you know, in recent years, the trend is to have almost many more blank canvas names. But what are you seeing in terms of interacting with clients? What are some trends that you're seeing in terms of client preferences? Do they really like the blank canvas, or do they want to have something that might be a little bit more evocative of the condition or some sort of a emotion that they want their customers to feel?
I guess the best answer is it depends. And the reason I say that is because, you know, everyone says, oh, all of the great names are taken. That's not necessarily true. It is definitely more challenging to clear a name because of the regulatory hurdles. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be an ugly name or that it has to have, you know, four or five consonants in a row. It means that, you know, there's a lot of factors that have to be looked at. You know, it has to, you know, the regulatory, working with an agency that has the regulatory expertise, the legal expertise, people that can, you know, understand the process, is very helpful, because there's hurdles that you can overcome. And there's also ways of making tweaks or changes to things that, you know, can still convey the same message.
Yeah, and it sounds like getting the client involved early and getting a foundation for what they're really looking for would be an important part of the process. Also, how can a client put their best foot forward with your agency so that you can come up with the best name? What I guess in another way to say that would be, what makes a good client from your perspective so that you can get the best product at the end of the day?
What makes a good client is, you know, hopefully that they're very much involved in the process. Their input is just as important as the input from the agency. While, you know, we are the experts, they are the experts on their product. It is, you know, engaging that team, getting them excited about it, you know, sharing their insight and sharing what they feel you know, they'd like to see is very helpful in guiding the process through from the agency. And in reverse, I think that it's really for the client to expect a consultative approach and full transparency from their agency.
I would like to, I'm just interested, we've been kind of talking around the idea of what a great name is. I would love to get your perspective on what do you consider a good name? What is a brand mark out there in the pharma space that you feel like, you know what, this was a really great name and what are the reasons why?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think a good name is a name that people remember. And how you remember it may not necessarily be by the name itself, but it's how they advertise around it, how it's marketed. And maybe something within that name that really evokes an imagery or that really stands out or that's unique in the sense that it makes you think and you say, wow, that's a really great name. But it's purely subjective. What I may think is a great name, you may think differently, and vice versa.
Would you have one in mind? Is maybe one that you've worked on in the past that you felt like at the end of the day that this was really a great name that kind of checked all the boxes of what you guys were trying to achieve?
I think over the years, there's been a lot of great names. One that pops into mind is Lunesta, for example. It's a sleep medication, and it's Lunesta, lunar for the lunar moth, and Esta for the Sonesta. I think it evokes that imagery, and you know they do such a great job on the commercials for that, where you see the lunar moth and trying to lull you to sleep. And I think that's a great name, and you know it definitely evokes that imagery of you know sleeping and relaxing.
Yeah, and I think of other brands that have really become almost household names. And you mentioned many consumer brands at the beginning, like Band-Aids and Q-tips. And I think of the classic one of those is Xerox, where it, you know if you're going to make a copy, it's a Xerox, no matter what machine you're running it on. So, and while there is a danger of genericizing your own brand to an extent, that may be less of a problem in the pharma space. But one of the household names that I think of very often is Viagra. That became so ubiquitous in media and in cultural references. And, you know, I wonder, you know, what maybe in your opinion, what are the challenges with getting to that status? And should that be something that brand teams or marketing leaders in the pharma company side, should they aspire to that or should they be concerned about that in many ways?
You know, I think things have changed quite a bit since that was approved. You know, as you can see from some of the commercials for some of the brands, the names have gotten a little bit longer or a little bit more unique than that. Viagra is a great example of a name that evokes an imagery. You know, you think of it as vigor or vitality, and you know it's short. It's you know, it's to the point. And again, you can still do that, but it does become more challenging with, you know, the oversight of names being regulated as well.
So I'm kind of interested about the construction of names, just in the sense of, and I don't know if there's a true answer to this, but do you look at things like how many consonants the names have, and do you try to like stick to two or three, or the soft consonants versus hard consonants, or Latin roots versus Germanic, or you know whatever other kind of root. I mean, are those part of the sort of the ingredients that kind of get baked into a process that you look at?
From the creative standpoint, yes, but you know, a lot of it is, you know, again, it depends, and I know that's not the best answer, but it really depends. Every situation is different. You know, you can have a name that has soft consonants or hard consonants, or multiple vowels. It's really, is it pronounceable? Is it something that people, you know, can understand or, you know, get the sense of what it, you know, what it may be or, you know, why they would want to. But also, from a trademark perspective, we look at it as, you know, we search for phonetic equivalents. So, for example, the word quick, you've seen quick, Q-U-I-C-K, but you've seen it spelled in several different ways, K-W-I-K, K-W-I-K, etc. When we do trademark searching, we take all of those phonetic variations into account. You know, even from just reading it, even if it doesn't, it isn't pronounced that way, when you see letters together, you know, you automatically want to check and see if there's anything that may come up from both a look-alike and a sound-alike perspective.
Yeah. And I would think, going back to your example of Lunesta, for example, you know, it's a calming name, right?
Yes.
And those soft consonants are really, really kind of flow, and it's a very calming name. And it probably would not work to have something that was, you know, very hard sounds, hard K's or hard sounds in terms of evoking that sort of calmness.
Not for sleep. I would think if it was a hard sound, you'd feel like you were being knocked into sleep as opposed to lulled into sleep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's another, very interesting.
Another thing I've noticed in some more recent names that have come out is the syllable count as well. So if you think all the names we just talked about, Lunesta, Viagra, even drugs like Zyprexa, all three syllable names, there has been a trend lately to go to a fourth syllable. I know that, you know, some brand teams have shied away from that in the past, but it seems to be a trend that's coming more to the forefront now. Do you think that will continue just because of the difficulty of finding marks that have not been used before?
Yes and no. I think that, yes, a lot of names have gone to longer syllables in order to, avoid the regulatory issues, but there are plenty of names, like, for example, Talt. It's a single syllable name, and it's a coin term. It's made up, and it's powerful. So it's not necessarily moving in that direction. But again, the challenges of clearing a name from both the legal and the regulatory avenues is challenging. So the agencies are trying to come up with different ways to get around that and also come up with a great name.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, that is the goal, is to make sure you have a mark above everything else, a mark that will make it and be accepted. That's understandable.
Absolutely.
Will, do you have final questions or anything for Jennifer? I think we're going to be talking a lot about regulatory, as I mentioned at the beginning of this program, next week when we're talking with your colleague, Nancy Globus. So, and I'm looking forward to that. And we hope that you'll be able to join that conversation as well and provide your input. Will, do you have any final questions or anything that to convey?
I think that we've really covered a lot of ground here on the creative side and the branding side, and really covering what makes a great name. As John mentioned, in our next episode, we'll talk a lot about what it's going to take to get that name through the various regulatory and legal hurdles. But, Jennifer, I really appreciate your time being on the show with us today. And I think our listeners have gotten a little bit of a behind the scenes look at what goes into the process of creating a name. And many people think, you're just kind of making alphabet soup, but there really is a method and a madness to doing this. And so thank you for your insights.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. I enjoyed this very much.
Hey, Jennifer, one last thing. We like to kind of give our marketers who are listening from a tip, leave them with one or two things that they can take away, they should know, maybe that they can take action on. So from your point of view, is there one or two tips about naming besides, hiring a great agency?
Sure. I have a couple of tips. First of all, choose an agency that understands not only your goals, but has the expertise and experience to guide you through the process. I think that's really important. Your agency of choice should be knowledgeable, easy to work with, and most of all, transparent. From the trademark perspective, work very closely with your in-house and outside counsel, and don't get too attached to a name until it has gone through the entire process. Basically, love your backups.
Yeah, great.
That's a great tip.
Yes.
It's a very good tip. Well, Jennifer, thank you again for your excellent insight and your excellent work that you do for brands. I feel like we barely touched on the subject, and there's certainly a lot more to know, but I thank you for what you've contributed. And I want to thank our listeners and followers for joining this conversation. And I want to invite them to join us for part two of the special episode on pharmaceutical branding and trademarks. In our next episode, we will be talking to Nancy Globus, who is the Vice President of Regulatory and Medication Safety at Addison Whitney. And Nancy will kind of build upon what Jennifer has just spoken about, and she will be focusing on the regulatory processes, hurdles, and challenges for gaining trademark approval in the U.S. and globally. So again, thank you for listening to this episode, and we will see you soon.
Thanks for listening to PM411, brought to you by the Marketing Excellence team at the Brooks Group. If you are interested in appearing as a guest on the podcast, or if you would like more information on how we can help elevate your team's marketing effectiveness, we are interested in speaking with you. Email us at pm411@thebrooksgrouponline.com. That's pm411@thebrooksgrouponline.com. We'll see you next time with more 411.